Hello and welcome to National League Town, Mets fandom, Mets history, Mets life, with Long Island's own Greg Prince and Jeff Heisen. Happy Thanksgiving, Greg.
Happy Thanksgiving, Jeff.
And happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners from everyone at National League Town. Greg, on Thanksgiving, tell me one Mets-related thing that you are thankful for.
The other day, I read a story in, I believe he writes for the Star Ledger now. Bob Glappish had done a story about Buck Showalter, how he thought Buck Showalter kind of got a raw deal, which is not the point of anything I have to say here. But in defense of Buck Showalter, Glappish, who's been around a long time, covered the Mets, covered the Yankees, said, look at all the great things Showalter did his first year. The Mets finished with a better record than the Yankees. And I really like stopped me in my tracks because I realized I don't think in those terms anymore. It seemed like Glappish was like writing from the year 2004 or something. And I think one of the reasons I don't have any hometown love for my fellow Long Beacher, Billy Crystal, is because when Willie Randolph was hired by the Mets after all those years as a Yankee bench coach and other positions he had there, and obviously as a great player for them, he said, wow, poor Willie Randolph. This was at some baseball dinner. It's like going to sleep with Pamela Anderson and waking up next to Louie Anderson. And that was the way the Mets were viewed 20 or so years ago and for a long time. And seeing it in Clappish's story as if that's something we should be measured against, that sort of mindset reminded me that, no, we're not there anymore. We're just doing our own thing. It's not like, you know, we're doing great after 2023, but the Mets are going to succeed or not succeed of their own volition. And I just don't worry about that. And when they hired a Yankee coach to be their manager, and yeah, it's a little annoying that the only pictures you saw of him were in a Yankee uniform, but I wasn't like, oh no, this says something about the dynamic of the two teams. So I'm thankful, at least in my mind, to be past all of that. I'm not saying I've evolved to a point where I don't care that the Mets have, you know, better record. It's nice that the Mets, I would like to see win and the other team not win. But I just don't feel like we're living in that era anymore. You know, around that same time, the beginning of the season, 2004, before that remark, before Willie Randolph is hired, so Art Howe is still the manager. I remember the Mets had made some sort of minor move, picking up a pitcher, like the same day that the Yankees were announcing that they were getting Alex Rodriguez. And it was like, oh my God, how sad are the Mets that they have to announce something so minor on the same day as Alex Rodriguez, who's going to bring so many championships to the Yankees. And that's just, you know, it was just tiring. So I'm thankful that that's really not the case. And I think, you know, if you want to say, gee, thanks, Steve Cohen, for kind of getting us out of that shadow, and the Mets, again, will succeed or fail on their own volition. Aside from, you know, I'm thankful for people who want to listen to this show and people who want to read what I write and for somebody who likes to talk to me once a week and everything else. That I hope goes without saying, but thanks to everybody.
I'm thankful for Mr. Mets. The Mets have the best mascot in professional sports, and it's not even close. Mr. Met does not have an act. Mr. Met is just Mr. Met, and he brings joy wherever he goes. He doesn't have a tired act like the punk in Philadelphia. He is just there spreading joy. I love Mr. Met. I'm thankful he's ours.
It would be hard to see Mr. Met dressed as he is being anybody else's. He's a great, great representative of Mesopotamia and all of us. I agree.
There was some coaching news. Greg, you talked about continuity in the coaching staff. Well, of course, we don't have continuity as manager, but there appears to be continuity in the coaching staff. We will have Jeremy Hefner back as pitching coach. Eric Chavez remains with the team. In 22, he was the hitting coach. In 23, he was the bench coach. He returns in 24 again as the hitting coach, but not the only hitting coach, as Jeremy Barnes will also be the hitting coach. Neither is an assistant. There will be two hitting coaches. Greg, I ask you, can two hitting coaches exist without driving each other crazy?
I imagine they've looked into that. One is neat and one may be sloppy. It's hard to know what the hell to think when they announced coaching stuff. They didn't really announce it so much as they kind of word got out. Hefner must be good because he has managed to hang in there for several years, several different managers, and they want him to stick around. I'm not exactly sure how to measure that because sometimes we have good pitching, sometimes we don't. The hitting coaches, as I recall, Chavez was moved to the bench because they wanted to give him something of a promotion, keep him from getting away and becoming somebody else's manager while they had Showalter, let him learn next door at the elbow of the deposed manager. And then they liked Barnes too. The Mets hitting coaches are great. The Mets don't hit. The hitting coaches need replacing. I happen to notice Chili Davis, remember, he was a Met hitting coach not too many years ago, was named a hitting coach in Anaheim for the Los Angeles Angels with Ron Washington. So somebody must like what he does and what he brings. Just in a broader sense, because they still have, as you and I know, they have what, like 11 coaches every team now. They have a lot to announce still. Base coaches, bullpen coaches, coaches with great euphemisms to them. If these guys survived the great David Stearns transformation, I think it shows that there is confidence in them because it's becoming clear that David Stearns is very much looking to build a world of his own, for the Mets' benefit, we hope. A lot of people coming and going, a lot of players coming and going. So it's hard to really read anything into one coach here and one coach there sticking around other than somebody has confidence in them. Hey, good luck, guys. Good luck to all of us.
If you're having turkey on this Thanksgiving, I hope that it is tender. The Mets offered contracts via tender and did not offer contracts via non-tender to certain players. One of those players was Luis Guillorme. He was a nice luxury to have in 2022 because everyone was hitting, and it didn't matter that Luis Guillorme couldn't hit because he could play the infield so well. In 2023, not everyone was hitting. Guillorme was in the minors most of the season. He won't be back. The Mets did not tender a contract to Daniel Vogelbach. Most Mets fans will not be upset with this. Billy Epler made two terrible trades at the trade deadline in 2022, acquiring unidimensional players, Darren Ruff and Daniel Vogelbach. Ruff barely made it into 2023. Vogelbach was there all of 2023, including that weird 2 weeks when he was on sabbatical, even though he was on the roster. Mets fans won't miss him at all. He couldn't play the field. He couldn't do much of anything in 2023. But DJ Stewart received the contract, and I was glad about that. DJ Stewart distinguished himself in the last 2 months of the season. He's not a great fielder, but he can play the field. Unlike Vogelbach, he can play the outfield. He can play first base, giving Pete Alonso a backup. I can see him being a platoon DH with Mark Vientos. I was glad that DJ Stewart returned.
Yeah, welcome back, DJ Stewart. It's like you never left. Guillorme, I think, was injured part of the year too. So I don't think he was like, it was kind of a surprise when he was sent down for a while. He came back. I got injured, I think, in Boston after the break. Wasn't back till September. I think it was more than a luxury in 2022. He did some serious filling in the course of that season. And of course, we hailed him as our utility Met of the decade. With the decade about 30% done at that point, we may have to look for a new guy. He did some legendary things. That's, I think we'll remember Luis Guillorme long after we've forgotten the numbers he didn't put up as a batter. Remember, this is the guy who catches a flying bat, a Louisville slugger, not the other kind of bat, in the dugout in spring training before any of us knew who he is. He has like a 22 pitch at bat. Another spring training when we already kind of knew who he was. He'd been around up and down through the years. And he made great plays. And part of that magic of 2022 that unfortunately dissipated. So hope he catches on somewhere and hope it's not to the detriment of the Mets. Vogelbach, what can be said that wasn't already grumbled throughout the 2023 season? I thought when we got him that, okay, this is a professional DH by trade. That's something we've never had because we never had a DH in the National League. And it was just striking how little he could do when he wasn't doing what he could do, which was, the occasional line drive and working long counts, maybe not 22 pitches. And otherwise, it just felt like you were in a void when he batted. So he seemed like a good guy, which is one of those things you say when you don't have any reason to dislike a player, and certainly have no reason to dislike him now that he's no longer on the Mets. I saw a statistic somewhere along the way that there was like one solid month where he was absolutely horrible, and the rest of the time he wasn't really that bad. But that solid month of being horrible is exactly when the Mets sort of went to hell, May and June. So you want to cut a guy slack. You want to not be automatically, oh my God, he sucks. But, you know, the Vogelbach was out of the barn by then. The right player at the right moment for a while in 2022, I'll say that. And it didn't really work out. I don't think he was quite as useless as Darren Ruff. But 2023 was a rough go. No pun intended. And if you remember the last couple of weeks, I was surprised. He played like once, I think, in the last 2 weeks of 2023. I know there was a story came out just around the end of the season, maybe just after Showalter and Epler were in disagreement over why exactly Vogelbach was on the team. So maybe that's why it played out as it did toward the end. But in the case of Guillorme missing and perhaps Vogelbach missing or both being non-tendered, you know, it opens up a little more space for Vientos, opens up a little more space for Mauricio. Mauricio hopefully can play some infield if he's not DHing, or I don't know if he has any kind of outfield profile at this point. Vientos, we've seen more of. Of course, he's going to be more of a DH than a first baseman. And Stewart, yeah, he gets a shot, and he earned that shot. And, you know, they've led about, I forget the exact, I think, what do we got, like 26 players, I think, 28 players maybe, on the 40-man rosters, a big void there, which, again, is, I think, part of the David Stearns new broom sweeping aside what didn't work or what he perceives didn't work. And you can't argue too much after 2023. So a lot of vacancies at the Hotel Flushing. We'll see who fills them. Speaking of coming and going, you did some going recently, didn't you? You took a trip out west that might be of interest from a baseball standpoint.
Yes, thank you for asking. I went to Vegas, baby, for my birthday. My son took me to Vegas to see our bad football team lose. And other than the last 5 minutes of the Jets' loss to the Raiders, we had an excellent time. But while I was there, the NLTI team was there working for you as we investigated baseball in Las Vegas. The Washington Post described Las Vegas as the new sports capital of America. It's hard to argue with that. They're going to have a baseball team as soon as 2028. They have a football team. The NBA loves Las Vegas. Their weird in-season tournament will have its finals at the T-Mobile Arena in December, and eventually they'll have a expansion team there. The Stanley Cup champion Golden Knights play there. The WNBA champion Aces play there. They just had an F1 race there. So there is an argument to be made that Las Vegas is the sports capital of America. But how will baseball do? When we were there, we stayed at the Tropicana. The Tropicana will be the location for the new 30,000 seat, that's all, retractable baseball stadium. They'll tear down the Tropicana. No one will miss it. And baseball will be played there. One of the cab drivers I spoke to asked why they're not putting it off the strip so people have an easier time getting there. That's a good question because the strip is hard to get around, but the southern part of the strip, I think it's the southern part, is now known as the Sports Corridor of the Las Vegas Strip because the T-Mobile Arena, where the Knights play, Golden Knights play, is across the street. As much as anything is across the street on the Las Vegas Strip. If you've been there, you know that nothing is a short walk, nothing is a direct walk, nothing is across the street because you have to go up a ramp, up an escalator, across a bridge, down a ramp, down an escalator, through a hotel, through a casino. But eventually you could get from where the Tropicana is, where the baseball stadium will be, to the T-Mobile Arena. And then about 2 miles from there is Allegiant Stadium. So there is an argument to be made for putting Tropicana in that vicinity. How will baseball do? As part of my investigation, I spoke to two cab drivers, and A friend from Great Neck, who now lives in Las Vegas, Long Island's own David Saunders, and they echo the much repeated comment that Las Vegas is an event town. You know that. Las Vegas is an event town. That's why F1 attracted so many fans of F1 last weekend, and why there were so many Jets fans there, and undoubtedly so many Giants fans there the week before. Is baseball an event worthy game? I'm not sure. That's why I have my doubts. I don't know if people from Cincinnati are going to go to Las Vegas for a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday series in April. I don't even know if Mets fans are going to go to Las Vegas for three weeknight games in the summer when it's 110 degrees out. Yes, they'll be in a dome, but you have to go outside sometime. So I have my doubts about baseball there. I think you need a loyal local fan base, and I don't know if they'll have it. They may have been better served going to Salt Lake City, but I wish them, well, I don't wish them well. Screw them. Screw the Fisher. Did Oakland wrong, and he deserves all the slurs that he's been getting from Oakland fans. But I look forward to going to see the Mets there as soon as 2028. So, yes, my trip to Las Vegas, other than the Jets game, a success.
I'm glad it was a success. I hope it was a success in the way people think of trips to Las Vegas being a success, or at the very least, you had a nice time with your son. The MLB, of course, has said, yeah, go ahead. It's fine with us. Still not a done deal. They still have to get the money to build the stadium. That is no sure thing, although Oakland seems less and less of a fallback position at this point. To think about the A's fans who were left behind in Philadelphia and the A's fans who were left behind in Kansas City, now a whole new tribe of A's fans to be left behind in the East Bay in a large market. I guess I was curious to know what you thought because watching the first just the pregame of that Jet Raider game on TV, mind you, I didn't even talk to a cab driver. I just had this sense. Do people even root for the Raiders there, was my thought. I mean, yeah, you're always going to have people visiting from out of town, especially in a place like that. But it strikes me. And again, this was like one of the, not too long ago, one of the gold star franchises, if you will, of the NFL. I mean, they were the Raiders, for God's sake. And now they just seem like, we're here so we can have other teams come in to play them. And I'm sure that they have fans in Las Vegas. But I noticed even John Fisher in his like goodbye statement to the city of Oakland was like, hey, we hope you'll come and visit us in Las Vegas. It's like, that's not how it's supposed to work. You should be embracing. I mean, he should be doing a lot more than sending him a good night letter. I don't know. There was something about it like they're still going to be A's fans, right? And you'll just come to Las Vegas, right? It's like, well, what happened to the bond between a city and its team, to sound romantic or naive about it, maybe in this day and age. I don't know. The whole thing just seems like a terrible idea. I mean, maybe 30,000 seats is realistic because, yeah, I don't know like how you would ever draw a lot on a going basis. And just the fact that we're talking about it in terms of, well, how many Mets fans, I mean, Reds fans or whoever are going to come into town for this. It's like, you should be worried about how many A's fans are going to be there. And you still hear in the places that expanded in the 90s in Tampa Bay and Arizona, which was in the World Series, how many of the people who show up to the games are there because they root for the other teams, because there is a it's hard to put down roots in some places and say, we've raised a generation of Rays fans or Diamondbacks fans or whoever. It does not feel something wrong about it on so many levels, as opposed to, well, we kicked Montreal the curb and now we're going to Washington, which was a horrible thing to do, the people of Montreal, but you sort of saw that coming and kind of understood it. I still don't, and I understand the situation in Oakland hasn't been great, but again, the ownership has been a lot worse. Thank you for your reporting. I'd like to ask you one more question while we're here. Okay, it's the outset of the holiday season. I would like to, in theory, be able to give you something. I can't in this particular realm, but I'm going to ask you what you want anyway. I'm going to give you some choices here. We know the Mets have two world championships, 1969 1986, close to our heart. We also remember a lot of great stuff. 1973, coming from behind the way we did, you got to believe, winning the division, winning the pennant, coming just short of the World Series. 1988, we won a division title, 100 games, played a seven-game series that we did not win to go to the World Series against the Dodgers and play the A's. 1999, a hell of a season, hell of an offensive team. Almost blew a playoff spot, but we made it. Game 163, we beat the Diamondbacks. We almost beat the Braves, too. It was a hell of a series. really was, but we came up two games short in that one. 2000, still that's much of the same team from 99. Some differences, great season, great team. Went back to the playoffs, second year in a row. First time we ever did that. We beat the Giants, who we weren't supposed to beat. We beat the Cardinals, who we weren't supposed to beat. We played the Yankees in the World Series. All hard-fought games, lost in five. 2006, rampaged through the division that year. Swept the Dodgers, seven games with the Cardinals. Did not win the pennant. Seemed like it took forever, but we got back. 2015, they didn't see us coming, but we won the East. And we swept through the Dodgers. We didn't sweep the Dodgers, but we beat them in a five-game division series. We did sweep through the Cubs. We go to the World Series. We lose in five to the Royals. Again, close games, but we didn't win them. 2016, come from behind in August, sort of like 73. We get to the wild card. We go back second year in a row. Hell of a pitching matchup. Bumgarner and Syndergaard, we lost. And finally, 2022, we were talking about a little bit earlier, and I think it's sort of, it's still in our hearts and minds to a certain degree. Again, big lead in the middle of that season. Just say we won the wild card, went to the playoffs. Playoffs didn't work out so well. So what I would like to give you, if I could, you have to tell me which one you want. If you could take any one of those 8 years that the Mets went to the playoffs and turned it into the third world championship in Mets history, with the understanding you still get 69 and you still get 86. I know one of them is between 69 and 86, but we're just going to say, for argument's sake, nothing changes. You still get 69, you still get 86. So I'm asking you, Jeff, as a lifelong Mets fan, if I could give you, and you can't say 2024, by the way. We all want 2024 to be a world championship. Of all the years that the Mets have gone to the postseason, I think they all kind of stand out in their own way, describe them briefly. 1973, 1988, 1999, 2000, 2006, 2015, 2016, 2022. If you could have one of those as another world championship, which would it be?
For our listeners, Greg did not let me know this question in advance. This is a spontaneous answer, and I'm not hitting pause to go do some deep thinking, as much deep thinking as I'm capable of doing. I would go with 2000. It's a difficult choice. 99, as you said those, and by the way, Greg also said that off the top, that gave every Met year that they made the playoffs off the top of his head. We do this show on Zoom, so I'm watching him. He doesn't have notes. Greg remembers all this off the top of his brilliant mind. And I was in awe watching that because I see that he didn't have notes to remember every Mets playoff year. And yes, I'm stalling a little bit on giving my answer, but I'm going to go with 2099 crossed my mind because that was such a wonderful team. And I still remember Bobby Valentine slamming his hand on the dugout railing in Atlanta when Kenny Rogers walked in. What did he do? He walked in
the pennant losing run.
In 2015, with Yoenis Cespedes' error in game one and Lucas Duda's error in game five. I would love to replay that. I would love to go back even just 2 years because I think that was a superior team. And if they had won one more regular season game, they might have won the World Series because they would have avoided a good San Diego team. But 2000 was so painful because it was the Yankees. And this was the mindset that we had at that time. This is a callback to something Greg mentioned at the beginning of the show. The Mets were playing the Yankees. Someone asked me in the lead up to that, do you want the Mets to play the Yankees? And I said, yes, I want them to vanquish them for once. And they didn't. And it was what was even worse about that was that overrated Derek Jeter, who is so stiff, so omnipresent, so awful in all of those commercials. Oh, I hate him. Hit a big home run in the game after the Mets won It was such a painful World Series. The ball that just dribbled past the infield. I would love to replay that. The Mets would have won a World Series at any time. That would be great. But to beat the Yankees in 2000 rises above. That's the answer I would give. What about you?
It's not like I haven't thought about this. To be fair, no, I wasn't looking at notes, but I did write something about this about 10 years ago, when the Mets were in their long hiatus between 06 and 15. What would you do? And I got all kinds of great answers from readers and also on social media at the time. There's a case to make for all of them, with the again, I would take it any time. The one year I don't feel is a year that got away was 16. Expanded playoffs that year. And to me, it was exciting enough that they got into the postseason as they did. I'm sorry they lost to the Giants, but they were facing Bumgarner, the guy they could never beat at Citi Field. And I wasn't surprised by that. If they'd somehow gotten by them, they would have played the Cubs. And I think it was the Cubs year. So I'm excluding that. Every other one of those years, I can see it happening. I will eliminate two, not because I wouldn't love it, but because I don't know that I could be any happier from those years. 1973, all the George Stone should have started game six stuff notwithstanding. I was 10 years old, and it was thrilling enough that they got where they got. And I don't know that it would have changed history all that much. And I'm not necessarily looking at change history. I just want a third World Series as part of this exercise. 1999, my favorite year. I don't know that I could have felt the Mets anymore. I don't think I've ever been the same fan since that night that Kenny Rogers threw ball for. But not because they lost. Just I was just in such a state of heightened Metsiness throughout that the whole Bobby V period, especially then. So I'm gonna give 1999 its propers and just say thank you. So okay, I've eliminated three of the eight. That leaves to five. I'm going to eliminate 1988, not because it wasn't perhaps the most talented team the Mets ever had. It's so frustrating they didn't beat the Dodgers, but we were 2 years out from a world championship. So I can't say I felt deprived. That leaves 2000, 2015, 2006, and 2022. You made a good call with 2000. I think they're all good calls. I don't like getting caught up in the idea that, oh, this was our one chance to beat the Yankees. I would have been happy playing the Mariners, quite frankly, because then it would have been the Mets are in the World Series, not look who the Yankees are playing in the World Series, or more like look who the Mets are playing in the World Series. I just wanted the spotlight to ourselves. As soon as Timo's ball didn't go, or Timo got thrown out home plate, it was Todd Zeal who hit the pitch. I just had a sinking feeling, although I think they acquitted themselves pretty well for the rest of the series. Day late, dollar short. What are you going to do? 2022 would have been wonderful if I felt like we were heading there. In June, I'm probably more upset they didn't win that division, that they didn't run the gauntlet of the postseason. 2015, I think it would have been fabulous because it still feels sort of recent. I just think, sort of like 2000, I just think they got aced out of the World Series by the Royals. Ross played better, and I really can't complain about that. And it was such a magical run. So I've gone through every one of them. And the one I am left with, the same answer I gave in 2014 when I wrote about this. 2006 is the year I wanted the World Series more than maybe any other year, where I could taste it. I thought that team was ready to go, ready to roll, as Kevin Costner says to Dennis Leary at the end of draft day. This team is ready to roll, except this wasn't a dopey movie. This was real life. Even though that team had some drawbacks, not enough pitching, certainly in the postseason. Pedro out, El Duque out, but so much better than that Cardinal team, except for 7 days when they needed to be better. It just felt like it was 20 years since 1986. I was ready. It was time. It would still be two if we hadn't won one since 2006, and we're going into 18 years next year. We'd say, "Oh my God, it's been 18 years," but instead, it's going to be 38 years. You know what I'm saying? The math is too long, but that's today. Even back then, I was like, man, all season, this team has played so well, especially before the cab accident in Miami that kind of reshuffled things when Duaner Sanchez is lost for the season. They trade Xavier Nady, which I thought was a mistake. They bring in Sean Green, who I always wanted Sean Green on the Mets, but he wasn't Xavier Nady at that point of his career. It felt like, remember, that's the peak of Beltran, Reyes, and Wright. LaDuke is one great Met year. Delgado, it's a godsend. Jose Valentin, come out of nowhere, hits 18 home runs that year. Julio Franco is a miracle coming off the bench. Chris Woodward is one of those, you know, super utility guys. And Endy Chavez could play everywhere and made a certain catch that we both remember and everybody remembers. Again, I didn't do this to sort of pick at scabs, emotional scabs. I really, you know, just kind of wonder which one, if you could have one to do over again. So yours is 2000, mine is 2006. If this actually was something that could be done, I'd be all for any of them, all for 73 or 88 or 22 or any of them. And yes, 24. That's the one you want, because that's the one that's technically available. You know, listen, I think anytime the Mets extend a season beyond their allotted games, even if it's just one game or one series, it's a great thing. It tells you that you had a hell of a season and that at least for one moment, you know, you weren't just, oh, it's over. You got to October. If I could give you 2000, I would. I'd take it too. If I could give you 2006, I'd take it too. Any of those years. So can I say, thanks for playing.
Thanks for asking, guys. 2006 is a great response as well. The last game of that series for the Mets, I consider to be perhaps my worst day of baseball. I don't think I've told you about what happened that day. My son Dylan was on a travel team. They had a night game, which coincided with the Mets game. So that was awkward. Plus, I was the team scorekeeper. So it's not like I could be listening to the game. I had to pay attention. Dylan had a terrible game. He was a good player. He had a terrible game. The coach took it out on him, which I didn't like. The team had a terrible game, but the coach made everybody stay after the game for wind sprints and an extra practice, which was cruel. And I wanted to go home and watch the Mets game. I remember sitting in my car as Gary Cohn called Endy Chavez's fantastic catch. Dylan, though, was beaten up because of how badly he played and how the coach responded. The coach never coached again after that season, which was fine with me. We went home, though, and we watched the end of the game, and it felt like the Mets were rallying. And I was telling my son's stories of Game 6 of 1986, when Beltran struck out against Adam Wainwright. So that was a painful day in Mets history. I'd love for 2006 to have a different ending so I wouldn't have to think about that terrible day in Mets history and in my baseball history.
Yeah, when things come to a crashing end on multiple fronts, as you described, I suppose it's hard to remember the good stuff. I mean, Endy, for God's sake, that they have his silhouette etched into the gate out in left field at Citi Field. That's how big it loomed in our consciousness as Citi Field was going up in the coming years. And, you know, I thought 07, that's okay. I came out of 06, despite my disappointment that night. Like, okay, we're going to get him next year. And of course, it's always a slightly different team. And of course, we didn't go get them next year. And 07's a whole different story that is not synonymous with being in first place most of the year, unfortunately, synonymous with the way it ended. But if we won in 06 and everything else happens as it happens, it's like, well, at least we won in 06. It's sort of how I look at 88. At least we won in 86. Somewhere along the way, a few years becomes a few more years. And before you know it, I mean, gosh, when 2000 came along, remember, oh my God, it's been 14 whole years since we've been in the World Series. Can you believe we've waited 14 years for this? Or when we won in 86, it was like, you know, realize it's been 13 years since we were in the World Series, 17 years since we won. And those seem just like, and you're younger then, so it's a bigger portion of your life. Again, I would welcome it at any time. I would love for people who've never experienced it, which is more and more, well, people in their 40s never experienced what it's like to see the Mets win it all. Listen, you know, you and I were, once we were old enough to appreciate everything about sports, we were also able to, and I hate the word, but I'll use it here, suffer from not winning. So, you know, if you were, you know, 7 years old in the early 2000s, and you've never seen the Mets win the World Series, like now it's been like 20 years of that. And you're heading, you know, for your 30s, and people who are in their 40s, And hey, even though we're in our 60s, it's been 38 years going on. We all want one. And then those were the years where we were as close as we could possibly come. I mean, within one game in 1973, or within a matter of, the postseason gauntlet, but we were in it in years like 22 and 16. So again, maybe I'm unusual in that I look back on all of those years fondly because we did get there. There were celebrations at some point toward the end of those regular seasons. There was that excitement that brought you into the postseason. I'd hate to think that they're just remembered. And again, I'm putting aside what happened with Dylan's game. That's a whole different story. But I'd hate to think that they're all just defined by the ultimate loss in those seasons. I mean, to me, 2000 is as much about beating the Cardinals and being at Shea Stadium the night they won the pennant as it is about anything that happened in the five games that followed. 2015 was a similar feeling. I mean, I'll never forget what it felt like, to get Yoenis Cespedes and not trade Wilmer Flores, and that sudden burst past the Nationals and beating them in those two series and winning in so many improbable ways down the stretch. I mean, again, I've already vouched for 1999, and I don't know how I can love the 1999 Mets any more if they had a world championship. Obviously, I would. But I guess 06 just has that's the one that keeps me up at night. Or I shouldn't say it keeps me up at night. It's the one when I can't sleep and my mind wanders to things like this. 2006 is the one I want to get to that World Series because I think we would have beaten the Tigers. And Kenny Rogers, by the way, who's their ace pitcher, one of them. So unfortunately we can't do that, but they're all good teams. And hey, we made it back every single year after. I don't mean we made it to the playoffs. We as fans, we didn't say, that's it, we lost to Oakland, we're never watching baseball again. That's certainly not, that wasn't the case in 1974, not going to be the case in 2024.
And here's to good memories in 2024. We're thankful to all of our listeners. And we would be thankful if you rated and reviewed National League Town. Wherever you get your podcast, if you can rate and review us, please do so. NationalLeagueTown@gmail.com if you want to send us a note. We'll be back sporadically in the off season, depending on Mets news. So subscribe to National League Town so you won't miss a single episode. You wouldn't want to do that, would you?
National League Town, the podcast that gives you homework.
So again, happy Thanksgiving. Until next time, I'm Jeff Heisen.
I'm Greg Prince.
And as always, let's go Mets. Copyright 2023, music provided by the Royal Arctic Institute. Check them out on Spotify.